Going to have Rabbi Moshe Perlmutter, who is in the middle of doing a kosherization a few blocks away from here at a restaurant, and we were able to steal him away from that, and he's going to demonstrate to us exactly what is involved in kosherization. Often in the OU, we speak about the fact that companies believe that when a rabbi comes into a company, he blesses the food. Why don't you send the rabbi in to bless the food? We try to tell them that that's not what a rabbi does. In fact, we encourage rabbis, rabbonim who work for the OU, that they should, in fact, not daven mincha at the plant. A lot of times they're in the middle of their work and they're not going to make it to a minyan, so they would daven in the plant. And we tell them that just reinforces the misconception of the companies that the rabbis bless the food. But I think anyone who has ever seen Rabbi Moshe Perlmutter work in kosherization would never dream that a rabbi just blesses the food. There's a lot of hard work, physical labor, dexterity, and knowledge, know-how. And if a person doesn't know what they're doing, they could get involved in a lot of dangerous activity. So Rabbi Perlmutter, who's one of the OU's leading experts in the kosherization process, was nice enough to share his morning with us. He's setting up, and he asked me before he begins to hand out this, which is taken from a newsletter that I'm the editor of. It's called the Daf HaKashrus. It goes around to the rabbis, Mashgichim. We have a fancy English name for them, which is Rabbinic Field Representatives. So they receive this on a monthly basis, and this particular issue he felt was very appropriate to what he'll be discussing. So I'll be handing this out at this moment.
As you're handing them out, I'll just begin the introduction. First, I'd like to thank the organizers and everyone that made this event possible, including all of you who that came this morning. As Rabbi Grossman just mentioned, when I was asked to speak today, I told him I was already scheduled to kosher at a takeout food place and butcher shop for a Pesach for the OU. And we worked it out that I started earlier this morning. I stepped out. I'll have to return when I'm finished. So I also would like to thank Fisher Brothers and Leslie, where I'm koshering, for the owners for letting me run out in the middle. I also ask you to bear with me, because usually I speak about industrial and commercial koshering in factories, hotels, hospital kitchens, not residential. Okay? Though the halachas don't change, there's still many practical differences between the two. That is why you'll hear me often mention and refer to hotel kitchens. I kosher and supervise a Pesach hotel, so it's been more than 10 years since I've koshered my own home kitchen. So I think I'll still be able to talk about it. I'd like to start with an overview of koshering in general and then point out the differences between koshering all year round and Pesach. Okay. Most of the halachas that I will speak about today can be found in Shulchan Aruch, Aruch Chaim, Hilchas Pesach, Hilchas Hagalas Kalim, it's Taf Nun Aleph and Taf Nun Beis, and the Mishnah Berurah Sham there. Now when it comes to Pesach, there are many chumras or stringencies that people follow. Some of the chumras are brought down in the Shulchan Aruch in Halacha. Other chumras are minhagim, customs, well-established customs that have been followed in families for many generations. And then there's a third category of some chumras which really fall into the category of spring cleaning. Okay? Just last night, I read an excellent article in the Kashrus magazine, this year's Pesach issue, and quoting Harav Pinchas Scheinberg Shliter. Scheinberg pointed out that much of the cleaning that women do before Pesach is above and beyond what the Torah actually requires, often causing the housewife to be too tired by the time the Seder comes around that she cannot enjoy the Seder or properly fulfill the Seder requirements. So it is essential, it's therefore essential to know what is required by halacha and what is considered above and beyond. I'll try to make these distinctions. Okay. I'd also like to point out, this is the disclaimer part, that since there are many different customs and differences of opinion in halacha, that everyone should follow his or her own rav for a final psak. Okay. My hope is that you'll gain an understanding of the issues that are involved that could come up during kashering and be armed with this knowledge to be able to ask the right questions to your rav. Okay. So there are four basic methods of kashering that I'm going to discuss. First is hagala, that's dipping something in boiling water. Iruri, which is pouring from a kli rishon boiling water onto a surface. Libun kal, which is a lower temperature of heat. I'll explain all these. And libun gomer. In order to know which method of kashering to use, you must first know each piece of equipment or utensil that needs to be kashered, how it is used. How the equipment is used will directly affect the method that you'll use for kashering. If something is used with a liquid, then you can kasher with a liquid. If something is used dry, only dry heat, a liquid, hagala, will not help. Okay, at this point, knowing how each piece of equipment is used is very crucial in industrial and commercial kitchens and factories, where there could be many types of equipment that you're not familiar with, and therefore you have no idea how they're used, so you wouldn't know where to begin on how to kasher them. But even in your own kitchen, where you are familiar, should be familiar with each piece of equipment or each pot and pan, how it's used, you still need to be able to identify how it's used in order to know how to proceed and which way to kasher it. Like I just said, there, when an item becomes non-kosher or chametz stick through a liquid, so it can be kashered through a liquid or boiling water, and any item that is used dry must be kashered by dry heat, which we'll discuss, and hagala would not help for that type of item. Something that requires hagala, though, you can use a dry heat. That's a higher level, and you could kasher anything at a lower level with that. So the first method that I mentioned I'm going to discuss now is hagala, which is boiling water. So the first step in kashering, and often the most critical, is to make the item clean before you begin. Okay, clean in halacha means that there's no tangible food residue or rust on the surface of the item. If there's just a discoloration, that does not affect the hagala. This is usually determined, or can usually be determined, by feeling the surface, which also helps to detect grease, which might not be visible. When I'm at a hotel kashering silverware, besides looking, I check with my fingers, rub my fingers on the piece, and again, to find grease. But as the first distinction, a discoloration, if you don't feel anything in the silverware or pot or whatever you're kashering is smooth, that discoloration doesn't bother us. Okay. Halacha then brings down that gumos are cracks or crevices or any other imperfection on the surface of the item you're kashering. If you have such imperfections, then you cannot do hagala. We're afraid that there could be bits of food residue, be'en, stuck in those crevices, and hagala doesn't help for any be'en, any actual food residue. It only helps to spit out the flavors that's absorbed into the metal. So if there's rust on the surface, even though rust in itself is not a problem, but the rust could be blocking bits of food that are stuck there, and therefore that part of the kli would not get kashered. So Shulchan Aruch brings down that you could take a torch, or it says you could do a libun on those cracks and crevices, burning out anything that's stuck inside, and then go ahead and do hagala on the rest of on the whole kli after you burnt out those small areas. And a small torch will help you accomplish this. At this point, I was asked to show off some of the tools of the trade in kashering. So I have different torches here. This is a regular propane torch. And you could use this torch to get inside the cracks and burn out any of the residue that's in it. And you wouldn't use this torch to kasher the whole piece, let's say it's a pot that has cracks in it, because that would take too long, so you could go over those parts. This is map gas, which is a little hotter and has a more intense flame. This is the same, it would be hooked up to the same canister of propane, and this has a benefit. If I'm doing a deep fryer or a narrow sink, I could reach inside. Sometimes these torches, they don't really go well. If it's upside down, it's meant to be upright. So this you can get inside all the cracks with keeping the can of propane in an upright position. Next, this torch, again, is hooked up to like a 15-foot hose, and I attach it to either a 20, 30, 40-pound tank of propane, like your barbecue tank is a 20-pound tank. And this is good. I use this size when I'm in a hotel for Pesach. We have the belt removed from the dishwasher. Dishwasher is one of the most complicated pieces of equipment to kosher at a hotel. We have a company remove it. That's usually a charge around $1,000 for them to do that. Otherwise, there's really no other way to clean inside underneath that belt. And then I kosher a libun kal, the interior of the dishwasher, with a torch of this size. And that,
are those dishwashers stainless steel or aluminum?
Stainless steel. Right. They're not like, again, that's some of the differences. They're not like your home dishwashers, which would be problematic, or maybe in plastic now, and that wouldn't hold up to a torch. One last torch to show you. This is a roofer's torch. This hooks up to the same hose, has a quick disconnect. I would use this in a hotel to kosher their stainless steel sinks. Also, they have stainless steel tables. We clean them down, and we can use this. Also, I'll speak later about Libun Gomer, where I need a much higher flame, higher temperature, 900 or 1,000 degrees. You could use this for certain items. You don't need to. I'll discuss it when we get to sinks. But certain things in a hotel and other places, I'll use a higher level of kashering just because it's more time efficient. There are some reasons why it would be better in halacha. Okay. Hagala is, like I said, is Hagala Kli Rishon. That means a pot that is used when you're doing Hagala, it has to be on the stove. If you're familiar with a Kli Sheni, that's something that was already taken off the fire, transferred into another Kli. So a regular pot like this would need Hagala B'Kli Rishon. If you can see, this is was not cleaned up for today. It's pitted on the inside. You would need to go over the inside with this, one of these small torches, prior to doing Hagala on this. Of course, this outside would need some more cleaning, and there are other ways, you know, to prepare this before you do Hagala. The other problem is, you see this handle, it's two pieces here, so we're afraid that there's be'en stuck between the two pieces. So this particular one, you could actually, I would take apart the handle if I were doing this for Pesach, take the two pieces apart, clean it out thoroughly, and I could kosher both pieces, including the handle. It would still need to be done. It's brought down that covers of a Kli Rishon need Hagala just like the pot itself, because of the Zeya, the steam that's coming up, hitting the top. So this also would need to be kosher, dipped into boiling water. Again, I could unscrew this knob, make sure it's clean around, and then put it together, and then do Hagala. Yes?
If you cannot take off the handle,
okay. I'm getting there. This pot, you see, is clean. It's really brand new. This handle does not come off. So, again, if you see that it's this, you could see there's really no place, no crevices here between the two. If you want, you could go over with one of these torches very lightly, and if anything is stuck in there, you could burn it out. But the reason why I brought this pot to show you, this has a rolled edge. Now, this rolled edge, you have this on sheet pans, on a lot of items, which means it's the metal is folded over. So the end could get stuck inside there and have no way of coming out. So what I would do in a hotel, a caterer's equipment, or the restaurant where I work, a takeout store, I would take one of these torches and burn around the edge. Anything inside would start oozing out, dripping out, and whatever's left in there is just charcoal, it's burnt out, and then proceed to do Hagala. Now, I don't know if you want to do this at home, because I don't think the wives would appreciate that, because it will discolor the pots. So, like I said, a lot of the things we do in industrial kashering, you really don't want to do it to your home pots and pans.
Doesn't torching help the glass and the candle when you put it around?
Again, it takes... Yes, it does. It takes a very quick... you don't leave it there for long, and it could melt it. That's why I wouldn't advise... Let me just get to knives, and I'll answer that. I'll answer two more things, and I'm getting to knives. Another thing that halacha brings down is a napa, which is a strainer, a pot like this, or a strainer. This one has flat edges, so you don't have the problem of the rolled edges. But the halacha brings down that since there are small holes here, it's very hard to make sure that there's nothing, everything is cleaned out of these holes, especially if you're using this for pasta, which is real chametz, that would be a real problem, or you're kashering from non-kosher. So it says that it's nahogu, or custom, not to kasher these with hagala, and it says ein l'shanos. We shouldn't change from that custom, and you really shouldn't. The solution is, you could run a torch around the ends, it would burn up everything, and believe me, when I do this on one that looks clean, you start seeing smoke, and there's really a lot of food stuck in those holes that you really can't see, just by looking at it. So, again, if you do this at home, this is going to turn blue and all different colors. Usually a caterer doesn't mind as much, sometimes they do also, but I wouldn't advise doing that in your house. Now, next thing are knives. The Shulchan Aruch brings down that the Mishnah Berurah here by Hilchos Pesach that you can kasher a knife with Hagala. As opposed to in Kuf Chaf Aleph in Yeridea by Isser, if you're kashering from non-kosher, then you need Libun for a knife. Okay, but there's certain leniencies by Pesach. Everyone talks about the Chumras, but there are also some leniencies by kashering for Pesach. And you'd be able to kasher a knife with Hagala. But then there's another problem with knives, is the handle. You can see this is two pieces, just like we discussed. There's many different, some are just stuck on. This has actually rivets. Again, you would have to go over the edge with a torch. And just for information, if you heat up the blade of the knife with a torch, you're going to ruin the temper of the knife. When it becomes dull, you won't be able to sharpen it again. So you really don't want to hit a torch to a blade of a knife. But the interesting thing about knives, I just want to quote, the Mishnah Berurah says, that's in Sif Gimel, Misha Efshalo mitzvah mina muvcha sheyikne chadashim. So whoever has in their possibility that they could buy new knives for Pesach, they should. It's a mitzvah mina muvcha. So I want to stretch this, and I believe nowadays most people are accustomed in their homes are buying, have a separate set of almost everything, for Pesach, besides ovens, sinks, and counters, but all pots and pans and silverware and dish, and of course dishes you can't kosher, and knives. So again, that's what I was referring to. I forget you asked me. It would just be better if you have something that has a handle. A lot of the caterers you go to, it's a big expense. Where I'm koshering now, every year he buys a few more items and puts it away for Pesach. So the first year I koshered there, it was a much longer, drawn-out job doing everything. And it's very painstakingly. But now, already a lot of the things, we just switch over, and he has stored from year to year. Okay, but if you are koshering silverware, so you have to be very careful, especially forks. Make sure in between the tongs that they're clean. Tines? Tines, thank you. Thinking of tongs. Just in a catering, at something like this, I just grabbed this. There's a little spring in here. You really wouldn't want to kasher this with Hagala because the mechanism in here would be too hard to clean out. And if you hit that spring with a torch, and I speak from experience, it'll ruin the spring. So something like this, you wouldn't want to kasher with Hagala or a torch. If it's very difficult, you could kasher it. I'm not going to say you couldn't, but you have to make sure it's very clean. These are not blind halachas. It's a metzias. In other words, if there's dirt there, fine. But something like the napa, Chazal telling us it's a minhag not to even attempt because it's just almost impossible to clean out. But it is possible. I mean, you could boil something in caustic and anything that's in there will come out. Of course, something in, you know, your pots and things that you have in your home that might discolor it, and you're not going to be boiling caustic probably in your own home. Okay, let me get to that. Okay. The other thing the halacha brings down, how would you kosher these small items? Well, in a hotel, large, we'd have a steam kettle, which is a very large kettle that's heated up, boils the water with steam. So you're able to use a basket like this. You could put your silverware, whatever you're koshering here, and then dip it into the water. Be using gloves like this so you don't burn yourself. Though it's still possible to burn yourself with this. Again, I speak from experience. And you could, if you put a lot, you shouldn't put too much at once because they shouldn't be, you know, things so much, you know, heavy sitting, touching each other. So what it says, you should put it in the water and then underwater, hold it there for around 10 seconds and then shake it underwater. What we like to do is just put the basket in the water first and then drop the silverware in. So as it's going down, each piece is hitting it, and then you could pull it out. If you don't have the luxury of having a steam kettle in your own home, which most people don't, you would have to do it on a pot on top of the stove, which is much more difficult. First of all, steam kettles being heated by surrounded on all three sides, and on your stove top, it's just the flame is from the bottom. Usually if you put silverware into it, the silverware will cool off the water, it'll stop boiling. Now you have to wait for the boiling to continue before you could pull it out or do the next batch. So if you're stuck in a place, like I do catering, if I'm stuck in a place that doesn't have a steam kettle, it's a little nightmare. If you're at home just doing a few pieces, it's not the end of the world. Another thing halacha brings down is pliers. Let's say you want to hold an item with a pair of pliers and dip it in the water. So you have to make sure that you hold it from a second location and dip it again so the place where the pliers was holding will also get koshered. I believe that would apply with the gloves. And if you're holding something with a glove, what I would do is grab on another point with my other glove. I mean, it could be that the glove is, if it's wet and you're holding it loosely, that would be okay. If you have a large item that won't fit into your pot, so Hagala has one mila that you don't have by Tvilas Kalim. When you toivel items, the whole pot or utensil has to be underwater at the same time. Kashering, you could put in one half, then turn it around and do the other half. Halacha says if you have a very large pot, it won't even fit half, so you could do Liban in the middle, and then do Hagala on each end. So that makes it a little easier. The next method is Irui, which is pouring from a Kli Rishon. Yes?
Before you go to the next method.
Nope.
Really, two or three questions. You take the pot and you fill it with water and put it on the stove and boil it, or do you put the pot into something else that's boiling?
Okay, both ways are acceptable. Now, if you have a pot and you want to kosher the pot for Pesach, so if you have a larger pot that you could boil and immerse that in, that's the easiest way. If you're going to kosher it by just filling it up and kosher it itself, I'm sorry I left that out, what you have to do is make sure that the water overflows over the edge. It's brought down that you could heat up a stone or something hot and put it in. That's very dangerous, by the way. Some stones actually can crack on the heat, and if you when you put something hot in there, I've seen it, the water shoot up. What I usually do is, if you fill it up to the very top, usually the boiling itself will make it go over the edge, and your home, it'll probably put out the fire right away. You have to relight it. Or you could take something and like splash it, make it go over the edges.
Okay.
Has to go over the edge all around. Yes.
Okay. It's not covering the bottom.
I'm sorry? You don't need that the whole the bottom.
Because it's on the fire?
Okay. The bottom's on the fire, but that's not why you don't need the water on the bottom. You need the water to go over the actual edge.
Right.
In other words, I don't need water to hit this side because water's on the other side. So if anything is absorbed inside the metal, it'll come out through that one side into the water. I don't necessarily need that it should boil on, the water should come in contact with the outside. I do need it to be clean, but I don't need that it should be on that side. Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I wasn't finished with my questions.
Okay. One, and then we'll get.
I have a plesha kapat. I have a pesach kapat that I have not used in many years, and I really don't remember whether it was nothing or plesha. Will this work?
Yes.
Okay.
You. Not only will it work. Yes. There's actually a halacha all year round that. There's no problem kashering a treif, non-kosher pot, but there's a halacha that you shouldn't kasher from milchiks to fleishiks, and back and forth. Chazal were worried that one time you might not wait the full 24 hours, you wait 23 hours, and you'll have a problem, you'll get mixed up. But the Chassam Sofer brings down, it's brought down here in Tafnun Aleph, Hilchos Pesach, that if you're kashering for Pesach, and now it's neutral, now you could switch it.
Okay.
No, so anything you're kashering for Pesach, if you want to change and make it milchix, it was previously fleishix, you can.
Okay.
And that's not a problem to exert.
Okay, just my third question.
Third question, all right then.
Finished.
Okay.
When I put it on the stove, does the stove cotton already after we've been kashering for Pesach, or
it would be good. Well, I'll speak about the grates. It's definitely preferable to have the stove kasher. It's
okay.
The grates themselves can really be considered self-koshering, so it wouldn't be the end of the world if you had already done that. But or if you're careful not to touch the actual stove. I'll talk about stovetops soon. Okay. Did you?
We talked about is it boiling or 212? Like if I'm in Denver, the Catskills, water boils at a much lower temperature.
Right. Depending on sea level. Right. I was in Banff, which is the Canadian Rockies, and I was also in the summer. I do a program in Copper Mountain, Colorado, and it's very different there. Yes. Well, luckily the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say 212. The Shulchan Aruch says when you see bubbles, right? So you would have to wait if it's longer or shorter time. But as a good point of reference, you know, at sea level and atmospheric pressure, it is at 212. Which let me just. There are many times, this doesn't really matter in your home. In your home, when you see the water boil, you'll know it's boiling. There are many times in factories, either you could have a huge kettle and it's covered on the top and you really can't see inside, or they could have something called direct steam injection, where they're putting, besides steam in the jacket, they're putting steam directly into the water, and that speeds up the boiling. I kashered a 40,000 gallon tank. It was two stories high, and you see bubbles there, and the supervisor there tried to convince me that it was boiling. So anyway, I have my own thermocouple, it's a digital thermometer, put it in, and it was only 140 degrees. And he was trying to convince me that it was already, you know, reaching boiling because of the bubbles. So again, you need to know, there are times where you need, you know, more than just to see the boiling. Do you have a question? When you're koshering silverware or something in a pot, does the pot need to be koshered first? First of all, when we're koshering, I left out very, very important that the silverware should be in Einu Ben Yomim, which means it waited 24 hours before you koshered. So Mi'ikar Adin, it really does not need to be. There are many, I think the minhag, which I said there are many minhagim, which are very valid come Pesach, that to use actually a Pesach pot, not only a kosher pot, but a Pesach pot to kasher your Pesach things. So that is, I think, the prevalent custom. Yes.
Is there a din by the hands being that if you not use the pot for a whole year, then it doesn't have to be
There is a shear of a whole year. I don't think it's that you don't have to kasher it at all, but there are other ways that you can kasher it that are more makel. Mili gimel pa'amim. There are other methods that normally you wouldn't be able to use just waiting 24 hours, but if you waited a whole year, then you could rely on those more kuladik ways of kashering. But again, that's getting into psak. You'd have to ask your own rug. Yes.
No. So what is the shita that you dip stuff for 3 days and dip it in water for 3 days? Glass?
Okay, that's something that I was mentioning. That's certain things, glass, which is a whole issue in itself, that's putting it in something submerged for 24 hours, dumping that water after 24 hours, filling it up with more water, cold water, filling it up again, letting it sit there for 24 hours, and doing that a third time. That's milui ve'iri. Gimel Paman, filling up and pouring out three times. There's certain circumstances that I'd rather not go into that now. But that's each instance needs, you have to ask a Shaila before you can do that.
That's not the
No. No, it's not. Okay. So let me get back to Irui. There are no more questions on Hagala. Irui is pouring from a Kli Rishon. So again, you could boil this on the stove. This is heated up on the stove. It's a Kli Rishon. Then you could take it and pour. Let's say we would do counters or in a hotel, your stainless steel tables or sinks. That's where you would do Irui. You could take the pot that was on the fire itself and pour. Or you could take a pitcher if you have a large enough pot, like when we have these steam kettles, dip it in and pour. Now, the problem is if you just dip this into the water and pour, this now has a din of a Kli Sheni. Kli Sheni doesn't help. Irui needs to be from a Kli Rishon. So it's brought down, again, you're wearing those thick gloves, that you hold it under the water, under the boiling water, until you see bubbles actually in the pot itself, which is usually around 10 seconds. And then this now has a din of a Kli Rishon. So each time, if you might need to make 10... 15 trips in a hotel, going back and forth. Each time, you'd have to hold it there, let it come to a boil, and then bring it back and do Iru. Yes?
In your home, though, you could just boil your chining and then pour it directly from the teapot onto the counters, correct?
Okay. If you don't have, you could use an electric chinik, but not all chiniks are the same. First of all, some of them are totally enclosed and you can't see if it's actually boiling. We spoke about actually seeing the bubbles. Some of them do not come to boil. They get very hot. It's good enough for the coffee, but it doesn't have an actual boil. So you really have to make sure that if you're using a chinik that you see it boiling and it is boiling. So I have a bunch of these. Actually today I'm using them where you could plug, line them all up, grab one, next one boils. When you do Irui, you have to make sure that the water is not splashing onto the surface. It has to, it's called the kiluach, the steady stream of water, and you have to methodically go and every area of, let's say, the table or the counter that you're kashering will be hit with that kiluach. Now, it's going to be impossible to, some water is going to overflow. Another difference with Irui than Hagala is after you clean the surface that you're going to do Irui on, you need to dry it off. Chazal said that the hot water from here, when it hits the cold water on the surface, the cold water is going to cool off the Irui and it won't work. So any sink or countertop that you're pouring boiling water onto, you first need to have it nice and dry. And again, go over each area. Now, in that handout from the OU, you see different types of materials that Irui will help. You see granite is great if people have granite countertops, formica. Just remember when you're doing Irui on them that the cabinets underneath the counters are not waterproof. So when you're doing a lot of Irui, you have to be very careful. I have, when I go to the hotels for Pesach, I have it's electric and diesel fuel, power washer, pressure washer that actually heats up to over 212 degrees. And I can actually do Hagala with such a pressure washer. Of course, it makes a big mess. and you really wouldn't be able to do that in someone's house. No. Again, I said Irui would help for a tabletop. I mean, the tables that you eat off of, your dining room table, that just needs to be cleaned and covered. Custom is to cover it. But countertops and sinks is what you would really be doing Irui on. And even that, there are people, again, there's many customs, you know, some of them based in halacha, some not, but all equally valid, even after you do Irui, to still cover the counters. Even more important is the sinks, which I'll get to next, is the sinks. A lot of people, after they kosher the sink, is to have some type of insert. Now, a couple of things. When you're koshering a sink, you have to pay a lot of attention to the drain. Around the drain, sometimes there's two pieces there. It could collect dirt. You could go over with a little torch. I found it's very dangerous, so if you're going to try it, be careful. I found that Drano works excellent as a cleaner. I pour Drano with gloves on and with steel wool, and everything in that area will come off. But then you have the problem of the actual drain pipe. If on Pesach, it's going to get backed up the sink, so you don't know what was in there that could come up. So it's a good idea to pour ammonia or any heavy cleaner that you're using down the drain before you kosher, and then, you know, following it with the boiling water. That way, again, you should still be careful. Nothing should come up on Pesach, but if it does, you're covered. The little strainer that sits in the drain, the best thing is to replace them. That would be the same as these large strainers, the napa. I think that should be easy to do.
Right. Something in China, if you can't see the water boiling. And I use a regular pot that...
Sure, you could use anything. If
okay.
Also, I mean, if you buy a thermometer and put it in the spout and you see it reaches 212...
Yeah, but I have like an electric pot that I boil water in all year round. Can I use that pot?
I would say yes, that you could use that for an Irui. Yeah, because... That's something that usually is not used for chametz anyway. It's usually just for boiling water. So as far as the minhag of kashering was something that was just for Pesach, I don't think that would be a problem. Like I said, many people use inserts, and that's very good. The next is libun kal. Now, libun kal is a lower temperature than libun gomer. When the Gemara speaks, Shulchan Aruch speaks about libun, it's referring to libun gomer, and then there's a lower level called libun kal. Libun kal with an indirect heat, like if you're turning on your oven and kashering the interior of the oven with a libun kal, that's around 500 degrees. Belsky has a whole that 550 for 1 hour, or if you're doing it for 2 hours or an hour and a half, it could be 450 or 400. If it's 370, so the time definitely matters in kashering with libun kal. But I just want to point out that's in the neighborhood of 500 degrees, whereas libun gomer is in the neighborhood of 900 to 1,000 degrees. So there's a big difference. Again, like everything, the prerequisite would be an eina ben yoma. So if you're kashering the oven, it's best, you know, not to use it for 24 hours. Clean it out thoroughly. Best thing came in the market for Pesach are self-cleaning ovens. A self-cleaning oven is actually a libun gomer. Ravelsky, we have a tshuva from the OU. I could show it to someone that Ravelsky explains. He heard from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zichron Lebracha, that even though you don't see Nitzitz Nitzin, which you don't see sparks flying when you turn on your self-cleaning oven, but that is considered a libun gomer. To do the grates, which I'll get to next, on the stovetop, if you have a self-cleaning oven, take off the grates and put them in the oven. Anything that can withstand the heat, which grates will, you can, you know, a big shortcut and just run it through the cycle. Just one point of safety. Again, there's not so much you'll be doing at home with libun that should be as dangerous as what we do in a hotel kitchen. But I personally would not recommend leaving the house while the oven's on the self-clean cycle. I've heard horror stories. You have to be careful. The cabinets on either side, it does get very hot, and you should really, someone should be around. Yes?
I'm sorry, you said that Lieben Gomer needs individual homes?
No, I didn't say that. I said Lieben Kahl. Lieben Gomer does not need. The best...
So self-cleaning oven wouldn't need...
I'm sorry?
To clean your oven then because it's...
So to clean the oven, if you're using with a self-cleaning oven... Then you're right, you wouldn't need Eino Ben Yomi. You wouldn't need the 24-hour downtime. If you can wait, the best is you do the kashering on a Sunday when you didn't use it all Shabbos. If you didn't use it Shabbos, that's always a good time to kasher. Yes?
But it's not a self-cleaning oven. I mean, kasher, you still have to put it in a certain way.
Okay. Again, that's one of the minhagim. There's a very strong reason to require that. With machlokas and halacha about a lieben kahl on an oven, ikar hadin, you do not need it, but a lot of people have the custom of putting an insert into the oven. I heard it messes up the recipes and the temperature, but there is a strong makom to say that. Yes.
Self-cleaning ovens need to be cleaned before
they really don't, because I think all year round, nothing to do with kashrus, they say if there's big stuff, you should clean it off. So it's definitely better. But lahalacha, if the mila, the reason why a self-cleaning oven is like a lieben gomer is because it totally burns up anything that's in there. So you really wouldn't need to.
And in sinks, after hazala, after your conversion, it isn't in to put an insert in?
Yes. Because, okay, there's a lot.
On a self-cleaning oven, how do you deal with the fact that the door kind of sits into the oven, that's like around the edges, but is that not an issue?
Okay, some of the customs, again, minhagim, is to cover the door with silver foil, especially if there's a glass plate in it. And again, if you're using an insert, that wouldn't matter. Mikar din, if there's any part that's not getting that heat, then it really shouldn't be a problem to transfer any non-Pesach thing back also. If you're really worried, I mean, you could go around it with a torch, but if you the gasket, I'm not sure if it's fiberglass, whatever that gasket is on a self-cleaning oven, you really don't want to go near it, not even with a Brillo pad, because if you ruin that, and they're very easily damaged. So, yes?
Your tensor is the job. So many used in kidneys for Ashkenazi. Do they have to be crushed?
No. There's bleas from kidneys are not a problem. It's because the whole thing of kidneys is a gezeira
for Ashkenazim.
Yep. Right, it's not a problem. This is nogeya all the time. We go to factories, I kasher factories, and most of the time I'm kashering for a Pesach run, or many times it could just be from kidneys. So they don't have any real chametz. So meikar din, I really don't need to do a kashering. If it's an Eino Ben Yomi, of course. We're saying everything we're kashering is with an Eino Ben Yomi. Right.
Yes.
In
the oven,
whatever the cycle is for this, I think there's a standard cycle, right? So you know, 3-4 hours. I think every self-cleaning oven is different. However, whatever the manufacturer's setting is. Yes.
So, no. A regular oven that doesn't have a self-cleaning.
Correct. Yes.
So that would need Eino Ben Yomi?
Yes.
But you
should especially pay something machmir that it's an Eino Ben Yomi.
But a self-cleaning, you definitely do not need.
Correct. But even there, I think it would still be better. But once it's an Eino Ben Yomi, d'oraisa, if I had a frying pan that someone cooked bacon and eggs in, I waited 24 hours, d'oraisa, I could cook and eat it without koshering in it. Okay, so once, anytime you're able to have the Eino Ben Yomi, it's, you know, when you're in factories and, you know, shutting down for 24 hours is a big deal, that's, you know, you have questions. But in your own home, I can't really see, you know, why you wouldn't be able to wait 24 hours, you know, schedule it somehow. Yes. Yes, I'm getting to stove tops. So, getting to, right now, that's exactly what I'm up to. The stove tops. I mentioned the grates. If you can put the grates, that's what the actual pots and pans sit on. If you can put them in the oven, a self-cleaning oven, that's great. If not, If you don't have a self-cleaning oven, you'd want to put either a blech or a few layers of silver foil over the flames. Again, you have to be very careful. The blech or silver foil shouldn't cover the knobs because the knobs can melt. And on the sides, it shouldn't cover the countertops because it could spread the heat and the counters could catch fire, or cabinets. And leave it there. I really can't tell you how long. It's something that you'd have to gauge. It really wouldn't be that long for the actual grates, but the surface under the grates, most people are accustomed for Pesach to just covering it with foil and covering. Now, if you're doing this method of a blech or foil, you're actually most likely will get a libun kal on that whole surface. Now, about covering the stovetop, which most people do for Pesach, the two things you have to be very careful. In the back of the burners is usually a vent for the oven. If you cover that, then you can cause a fire from the oven. It's very dangerous. So if there's any opening in the back, which is usually like the chimney or vent from the oven, you have to make sure the foil stays clear from that. The other problem is in modern ovens, you have actually computer chips in that console, and they don't really like heat. And you're going to end up frying the inside of that computer console like my friend did. And so you have to be very careful when you're koshering. When we're koshering commercial ovens, they stand up to this heat. They don't have those computer chips. And again, it's something that you should be very careful. Because you're many. I mean, there's usually you have two burners and two burners, so the part in the whole middle.
Yeah.
Many times you'll put a spoon down there or a pot, or your pot will touch it. So you want that kosher. If not kosher, food will spill. Obviously, for Pesach we're cleaning it all, and it's better to cover it. It's yes.
You should lift the top of the stove up and clean underwear and gasoline.
Right. Well, most of the modern day ones, I think they're mostly concealed. That they you really don't have that problem. But on the bottom, it's really, again, you want to clean it. This is the stuff that's on the bottom really won't affect kashrus. I mean, when I'm at a hotel, I take that apart because if I don't clean out the grease from there, I could cause a grease fire when I'm doing that. But as far as anything that's underneath there, it's really not a problem. Now, I'm not really here talking about cleaning, but like I mentioned before, and where Scheinberg Schlitter was speaking about, you have to know what's required by halacha and what's not. I remember as a bachur, I was at someone's house, Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and I was on a ladder cleaning their walls, you know, up by the ceiling, you know. That was spring. Sorry?
Hasidim do that.
Yeah, okay. That was spring cleaning. That wasn't, okay. So they got use of a bachur and yeshiva.
On the half of the housewives, if you're doing so much, you do a little bit more.
Fine. Fine. But as Rabbi Scheinberg points out, if you're doing a little more and you won't A, enjoy the Seder, which is your obligation to enjoy the Seder, and B, will fall asleep before you eat afikomen or those other halachas, yetzach schar b'hasedo. So that's fine, but not everyone does. Some women are weeks before constantly doing it. So if you're able to do it, fine. No one's arguing that you can't do extra things. I preface this. There's nothing too much that you could do. No one's putting down any, belittling any chumras, but it shouldn't be at the expense of an obligation. But I just want to mention the bottom of the inside of the stove, that would be similar to behind a refrigerator. If there's a place that you would not normally pull something apart, and you're not going to go there, even if there's chametz back there, especially nowadays when we make a mechira, there's no reason, min hadin, to pull apart back the stove, pull out the refrigerator, you know, unless it's something you do every day, then you know you have to make sure there's nothing there. But most people don't pull it. You know, if you want to do it for this is your one time a year to do it, that's fine. But you should know that's not the halach. So I think that would include spaces underneath the oven there. The knobs should definitely be cleaned, especially since you're touching them with grease. I remember I used to replace the knobs and. But they just need to be cleaned. They don't actually need to be replaced.
You have to mention that the knob goes inside, so how you clean the knob?
You can take it
No, you only have to clean the nub because not because of kashering, just so if there's any residue on it, it shouldn't be on your hand on Pesach. So any part that's in further that you're not touching, there's no reason to clean it. There's no reason to clean it.
Do you have to cover the
nub? Again, if you could clean it properly, you don't need to cover it. If you feel that you don't feel comfortable with the level it got cleaned, then either buy new replacement knobs or cover it. But behind the stem of the knob, there would be, I see no reason. I mean, if it's sticking out, that part of the stem, and it could fall on something, then yes. But anything that's out of sight, out of mind, yeah, you really don't have to worry about it. I'm sorry.
If you don't have a self-cleaning oven, grates on top of the stove, should you turn them upside down and cook them for an hour?
Well, I don't think you need a full hour, but what I said was you could cover it with foil, and what covering it with foil or a blech does, the heat that's rising underneath it will be reflected back down onto them, and that will do just as well, if not better, a job than actually putting it on the upside down. But you could do that also. You could, I mean, that's definitely safer. You know, it's take these two, put them upside down on these, and then when you're done, flip them, you know, over. You could do that also. Again, I hate to say it, time. It's they're really self-koshering. You basically want to get anything that's, you know, burnt, anything that might still be on them. I'm sure you're going to clean them with Easy Off and soak them and scrub them as well as you can. And not, it shouldn't be more than 10 minutes that you would need under the right circumstances. But I really can't nail down a time. Yes.
I'm not sure I just understood what you said.
Okay.
I hope I did. If I put my blech on top of the stove and I turn on the burners and I leave the blech there for 10 or 15 minutes, then the grates are kashered?
Then the four grates, if they're clean, will be kashered, yes.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Okay. Again, the blech has to be clean also. Okay. Yes.
Is there a problem if you have different size flames and the grates are moving around during the year? Do they all have to be kosher on the biggest flame?
Not really, because once you're the smallest flame there, you're going to get the higher temperature. It's not like Kabbalah Kapoto that by if you're koshering something on nerds, if something is used, let's say in a factory under 212, less than boiling. So in certain circumstances, you can kosher at that same level a little more, as long as it's a higher level. But once you have something, if you have something used at a higher temperature than 212, which many, you know, like a pressure cooker, it doesn't matter. 212, once you hit 212, that's enough. So same too would be by this Libum.
On the bigger fire, it's reaching further out on the grate?
Again, that's why you're putting the blech or the foil, and that's going to help spread the flame, so the whole grate should... I mean, if I had, you know, I would want to put the grates on the larger flame. I mean, it's a good idea. Just, you know, it would speed up the process and you wouldn't have the problem. Okay, let me just real quickly, I'm sorry, I just want to mention the hoods, which a lot of people have confusion about. The hood above your stove, people ask, it definitely has to be cleaned thoroughly, but unless you have a very large pot, and that will minimize the distance between the top of the pot and the hood, you really don't need to actually kosher it. Many people will cover it, and that's a very good idea also. But if there is a close space, and what's that distance? If you're going to leave the pot uncovered, and the zeya will go up, and the condensate will form on the hood and then drip back down, then that is a problem. And most kitchens, it wouldn't be a problem. The pots aren't that large. But if you happen to have, you know, 40 people over for Yom Tov and you have one of those large pots, it could be a problem for you. You would have to ask. And Libum Gomer, which, again, is the last thing I'm told. I'm running out of time. Again, there's different ways. Mostly doesn't apply in your home. We would use charcoal, which brings an even heat, and the blowtorch. And just... And wishing everyone Chag Kasher v'Sameach. Thank you.